I'm gonna change. Welcome to Let's Drive, SA's motoring podcast, brought to you by Toyota Gazoo Racing South Africa. In this episode, we discuss the Honda Civic Sport with CVT Gearbox, the BMW X7 and the Kia Seltos. We also chat to Toyota Gazoo Racing SA Rally Champion Guy Bottrell, and it's the Let's Drive Top 5. Are you ready? Let's drive. Oh man, what a tune. And you know, when you hear that, it's time for Let's Drive. Episode 5 is well and truly upon us. It's me, Derek Alberts, and as always, I've got my co-hosts on board, Voldu van der Waal and Hannes Visser. How are you doing, Voldu?
Oh, Derek, we're surviving. We're getting there, and actually, no, we're doing quite well. I can't complain. In the midst of all of this.
Yeah, considering everything, we're surviving and thriving, Hannes, I'd say.
I am a positive person. My glass is always half full. Not this very moment, but later this afternoon it will be, because it is Friday. I still have all the essentials I need to get me through a weekend, and that includes lots of wood and meat. So we will be brying and having a brandy later this afternoon.
Yeah, we talk about lockdowns and having to spend time at home. I think you certainly do thrive in this atmosphere a little bit, Hannes, because you're a man of modest means in that, yeah, you give you a bri, we give you a bit of meat, and you'll certainly make the most of it.
I'm also quite resourceful. I had a freight of a load of wood, proper bushveld wood, delivered to my house yesterday, all 100 bags of them, so I can get through winter for sure.
Yeah. Well, 1 week of winter at least with 100 bags, but okay.
Yeah, but I still had 300, so I'm at 400 in total.
Yeah, I know we've spoken about it in previous episodes, Voldu, but it does seem as if this lockdown is coming to an end, and yeah, we can only smile at that possibility, and we certainly are happy about it, but more over than anything is the fact we will be able to get out into the open roads more. I mean, I know that you and Hannes have had a chance to sample a couple of cars during the time being, during the lockdown, with permits in hand, of course, but yeah, the freedom of movement will certainly be very, very welcomed.
Oh, absolutely. Going across provincial borders is imperative for us, because Gauteng is a tiny little place. It's not the prettiest part of South Africa. And just being able to nip across the border to Parys, for instance, in the Free State, where we have some pretty roads, or out to Mpumalanga especially, that I can't wait to do again.
Oh, man, it's really, really exciting stuff. And it feels so weird. I mean, we've been chatting about it quite a bit. I mean, if you had mentioned something like this 4 or 5 months ago, take, for instance, when we were covering the length and breadth of Saudi Arabia for the Dakar Rally 2020 for Toyota Gazoo Racing SA. I mean, imagine if we had had this conversation in the Fortuna, saying, you know, in a couple of months' time, we won't be able to be here because we won't even be allowed to get out of Gauteng. I mean, we wouldn't have been able to fathom it.
Not at all. I would have asked you, what did you drink while you said that in Dakar? Because there's no alcohol in Saudi Arabia. And if you said something as ludicrous as this, I would have wondered where you got something from.
And on top of that, we would have said, okay, cool, just for instance sake, if it did happen, we wouldn't have been able to cope. It would have been too tough. I mean, it's impossible. Yet, I mean, Voldu Hannes speaks about being resourceful. South Africans are very resourceful. We've become a very hardy bunch, given what we've had to endure over the last couple of years. And yeah, we've managed to survive and dare I say, thrive.
Lesimo is a boer maak 'n plan, but it's not just a boer. It's actually the entire planet. The human race is quite resourceful and adjustable. And we're all hanging in there. We'll get through it one way or another.
Yeah, so no more lockdown speak. Let's get into the cars.
Before you do, I just want to quickly add, Valdo said nipping over the border to Parys or Mpumalanga or whatever. one of my favorite places in the world, and I was lucky enough to spend quite a bit of time in December there, not only Namibia, but Botswana and the Moremi Game Reserve. And I believe the Okavango Delta at the moment is the prettiest with the largest or the biggest flood that they've had in years. And as soon as I can get my butt across the border, I will be heading into that direction.
For sure. I think a future Latvil episode calls for that area to be scoped, Hannes?
Can you imagine if we sit underneath a tree there with elephants roaming and hippos in the delta and we record a podcast there? It'd be like...
Yes, so we'll do the Latvil episode for TV, and then, of course, we'll do Let's Drive for our listeners. I think that is a great idea. So, let's talk cars. Living the moment till I die. First up, Voldo, you got to experience the Honda Civic Sport, but more importantly, with the CVT gearbox.
Oh, Derek, you almost said something. Well, you did say something that's got Hannes' backup already, because him and I...
Can I just interrupt right there and then?
Yes,
already.
Yes, because you said Civic Sport, the word sport, and CVT in the same sentence. And you cannot do that, Derek. It's a sin.
Okay, tell us why.
Well, Hannes, since you've interrupted, tell us why.
Because there's nothing sporty about a CVT gearbox. Derek, have you ever driven one? Any car with a CVT gearbox?
No.
So it stands for continuous variable transmission. So it doesn't have an automatic gearbox. It's a belt that slides up and down a cylindrical cone. And all it does, your right foot and the accelerator pedal becomes a volume control, because all it does is it ups the volume and it doesn't make the car go anywhere. It is the most horrific invention ever, and I feel sorry for public relations spokespeople and marketing people at local importers and manufacturers that have to stand in front of the country's media when they launch these cars and tell us about the advantages and benefits of having a CVT, because these people surely can't even believe what they're saying. But they're not building the cars. They come from overseas, so they have to sell them. And then they stand up there and they say, yeah, but it's the future, and they're more fuel efficient. Crap, it's not. It doesn't drive well, and it's not more fuel efficient. In fact, we have proof that during the end of last year, we followed the West Bank fuel economy tour around the country, and the cars with CVTs were lost. I mean, they fared horribly wrong. They were terrible. So no, I can't see the benefit of it at all. And to put it into normal terms for everyone to understand, if you think back at high school and the little scooters that your girlfriend used to ride in standard 8 or 9, that's what a CVT sounds like. And that's exactly what it feels like when you drive. It just goes, and it goes nowhere. It's terrible.
But tell us how you really feel now.
I can't say those words on
the air. Honest, I think you should sit back and just breathe deeply and get your heart rate down again. If you can just get it down to like 100, that would be great.
Well, I've tried how many times, and every time we get a CVT and we test it, it's the same thing. And then people say, no, but now it's better because it's a year on and they've developed it. Bullshit, there's nothing wrong with a normal torque converter automatic gearbox.
Do you concur?
There's nothing wrong with it. But, and please can I now interrupt Hannes' tirade for a little bit there and just come up for this poor Honda, which actually has a very good CVT. And I have to qualify that immediately by saying that I used to feel exactly the same as Hannes. I didn't get quite as worked up about it because, you know, that takes effort. But I never liked them until I actually drove two CBTs recently that just showed me that maybe these things are coming of age. I mean, Hannes said they say it's the future. Well, it's been a long time since the first one was designed, because there was this chap that lived in Italy called Leonardo da Vinci, who actually designed the very first CVT back in 1490. So they've had a couple of hundred years to refine the bloody system. And it seems like
it's right after 500 years. Yeah. I mean, come on.
It seems to me that they are finally making a little bit of headway in refining these things, because up until very recently, I'd say as recently as last year, I haven't driven a CVT that I could say was acceptable. They were all terrible, just horrible things that took all the fun out of driving, until I got into first the Honda Civic Sport CVT and then the brand new Toyota Corolla sedan, which also has a CVT gearbox. And both of those CVTs are more than just passable. They're actually bloody excellent.
Yeah. I'm going to argue, but anyway, I haven't driven these two cars, so you're welcome.
How can you argue, Honest? You haven't even driven them.
Because I've heard for centuries, that the next generation of CVT is going to be better, and I haven't driven one that's better. Okay, I haven't driven these two, so maybe they've improved 1%, which means they're still a lot worse than a normal conventional decent automatic gearbox.
This sounds like the classic lockdown speak. I've heard from my uncle's father's prior roommate that something was going to happen somewhere along the line. The government was going to do this. So you haven't experienced it of late, though, Hanbal, but just from what you've heard.
No, because Walden and I speak on a daily basis, and when he says, okay, so on the cards for this week, or the test cards that are booked and that are coming to visit us, and he says what it is, and if it contains the letter CVT in it, I'm not interested. I say, go straight to you, Waldo, and you can drive. So I haven't driven them along these two because I don't want to.
And so, Waldo, when you got the invite, did you take it with open arms, and did you hate it as much as Hannes?
No, I didn't take it with open arms because I dread driving a CVT. And it really was a question of limited supply leading up to lockdown or during lockdown. So we just, you know, took the car into format, and it was a good move. I have to quickly add before Hannes carries on about the Sport and CVT that Sport in terms of the Honda Civic refers to the spec level and not to the sportiness of the car. Mm. So it's not meant to be a sports car. By any means, it's got a little nod to it. It's got aluminium flappy paddles behind the steering wheel and aluminium pedals. But for the rest, it's just a normal Honda sedan with a sports spec level.
You see, Valdo, right there is a problem because it's got flappy paddles behind the steering wheel to change gears, but it doesn't have gears. So what are you changing?
You are changing simulated gears, which force the engine to do certain things, as in up the revs and apply engine braking and so on. It's all software and ECU controlled.
Yeah, I don't like it. Give me a real car, please.
Whoa. Well, okay. So we know where Hannes stands on the matter. Valdo, do you like the addition? No?
Well, it still wouldn't be my first choice. I would always opt for a well-designed, proper automatic gearbox with a torque converter, like Anna said earlier. That is the way forward to me. But then we're also in our mid-40s, approaching 50, and maybe we're just too old for this. Maybe the PlayStation generation really want cars that have no gears and that have no moving parts and that just make noise and go. And in that case, this will answer their needs, but I could certainly live with it. If I have to have a CVT car to drive every day, it would have to be either the Honda or the new Toyota Corolla.
Can you see it being the future?
Sadly, yes. I think many manufacturers are making headway with their CVT systems. And you know, it's got fewer moving parts than a traditional gearbox, fewer things that can go wrong with it. It is more fuel efficient. It keeps the car and the power more accurately than a normal transmission does. So I do think it will be the future, but I certainly hope that they refine them a hell of a lot more before they become, you know, standard issue instead of an automatic gearbox.
Highlight?
Phoning Hannes to tell him that it was actually a good gearbox.
Look, I just want to say before people kill me, the Honda is a great car. All Hondas have always been great cars. The Civic is a fantastic car. I've driven lots of Civics. I've driven the Civic Type R, which is a real sporty car that deserves its name and so on. They're proper cars. It's just a pity that this specific one is hampered by a silly thing called a CVT gearbox. But the rest of the car is great. Quality is good. Build quality is great. Ride quality, everything is perfect. It's just,
I'll tell you what's the other thing that hampers it a little bit, unfortunately, is its price. Because the 1.5T, the turbo petrol sport CVT powered car, is 513,000 Rand. And you can get a Toyota Corolla for significantly less, I think 50, 60,000 Rand less than that, with the same spec level. And to be honest, that's just too much more to pay for the Honda.
Well, conversely, the low light for Hannes was your highlight, Valdo. So when you called him saying it wasn't actually that bad, Hannes absolutely hated that part.
I think he's spot on, Derek.
Like I do now. My argument will always be that there are such good normal torque converter automatic gearboxes. Look at Volkswagen with the DSG, the direct shift gear system and so on. I mean, they're fantastic gearboxes. Why not stick to those? Why do you have to change something that wasn't broken? And like I say, these poor marketing people have to stand up there and defend these cars, and they've proven not to be fuel efficient or anything user-friendly or anything. So anyway, I'll stop now.
Do you know what the definition is? Is it a boomer? I think it's a boomer, the correct term, Hannes.
I don't know.
Okay.
What is it?
It's from the baby boomer generation. Anyone who's older than the person using the word usually used if said person is being annoyed. So I think this is certainly a boomer alert conversation because, you are definitely not embracing the future.
No, I'm not. I'm stuck in the past.
Ah, no, fair enough. That's 100% correct. You can be that what it may, Voldu, what would be your low light?
I think the disappointment in the car's pricing is really the low light for me in the Honda's case. It is a good car and it deserves to sell more than they do at the moment. And I think the only thing that's hampering it is its price.
Let's drive out of five.
With the price and the fact that they could have just, you know, put a proper gearbox in there, I'd give it a 3.5.
3.5. That's the Honda Civic with that gearbox that Voldu doesn't mind, but Hannes absolutely hates, the CVT gearbox.
Am I not getting a chance to rate it out of five?
Oh, well, we know exactly what's going to be
yours. Well, you didn't even drive it.
Yeah, but let's have it.
No, I'll respectfully decline. Thank you very
much. 3.5 from Voldu and no comment from Hannes. And I'm gonna change. Moving over now to something with a gearbox I think you fancied a little more. And Hannes, you got to take it on to the road, the BMW X7.
It was just before lockdown and we did take it to Mpumalanga on a beautiful road called Sly Hook, which leads to a tin mine. Beautiful piece of our country, nice, lovely road. And we took the X7 down there. It's like traveling first class on the road. It really, really is. It just glides over whatever comes in its way. What a fantastic experience. Proper, proper, big luxury SUV.
Yeah, big sums it up perfectly. Yeah, it's probably enormous. A 7-seater first class SUV, 3 rows of seats, and sheer driving pleasure.
Absolutely. But Derek, if I say big, that's the understatement of the year. This car is enormous. It is proper big. I mean, the surfaces of the body panels, I would hate to be a person at a car wash and see this thing drive up and go, ooh, damn it, I have to clean all of that, because it's a lot to clean. And it also officially has the largest kidney grill that BMW has ever made on any car. So if that thing pulls up behind you, it fills your rearview mirror with huge road presence, and it is enormous. But then when you drive it, it doesn't feel like you're driving a ship. I mean, it's still a BMW, so it reacts well to all the inputs and so on, and it just glides, eh? It's, oh, what a car.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's built on the BMW X5, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with the X5, and there's all of the question mark, was there really the need for a bigger flagship SUV for BMW?
Well, that's what all the manufacturers do. They find solutions to problems that didn't exist. And that's why crossovers exist in the first place. And you know, they keep on finding these little niches and so on. And, like Mercedes, BMW, they all do the same thing. Audi have got big SUVs, and now BMW is up to the ante as well by being the X7, which they say is the SUV of the 7 Series, you know, which makes sense. So if you want all the luxuries and space of the 7 Series, but you want the advantages of the SUV, which is, of course, sitting higher, having a better view, and the ability to go places where your otherwise low ground clearance sedan cannot go, then, yeah, why not? You know, it's a small market. Few people can afford that sort of thing. But obviously, there are enough of them for them to justify making it.
It's a giant car in a small market. And I don't think pictures do it justice. And you can't comprehend just how massive this thing is. I think we're looking at around over 5 meters in length. It's tall, over a meter tall, a width of around 2 meters. The thing is really massive.
Yeah, sorry, Derek, it's much more than a meter tall. It's almost 2 meters tall. The other thing that's also impressive, all that space, of course, means that the occupants, each seat is an individual seat, and it's absolutely fantastic no matter where you sit. I mean, it's one of the only SUVs I've ever found that the third row of seats is very, very usable and luxurious, even for a 6-foot person like myself. I won't mind sitting in the back all the way down to Cape Town.
Mm. Yeah, that's an impressive.
Part that you can say that of.
No, we've had this.
Is that 6 foot in height or width?
Yeah, well, whatever. You can also flatten them and make it bed in the back if you want.
So what's an offer apart from this massive car?
All the controls and electronics and connectivity that makes you feel like you're in control of an army. You sit behind that steering wheel with all these controls at your fingertips, and I can get into all the detail, but you know, all the info is available on the net. Go and have a look. There's just too much to mention. BMW has taken their connectivity and infotainment systems to the next level, and all of their latest systems are obviously at your fingertips on this car.
Oh man, it does look like a magnificent vehicle, and certainly truly impressive. What was the highlight for you?
Filling people's rear view mirrors. I shouldn't say that because that's what BMW people normally do, eh? No, just the absolute comfort and convenience while flying first class.
Oh, man. And your low light?
There was a low light. The Ooh. Thing has got enormous wheels. I can't remember, is it 21 or 22 inch wheels? And besides the fact that it does have BMW's four-wheel drive system and it can go off-road, you won't because you'll damage it. The enormous wheels are low profile. And on the way back, we did hit a pothole and immediately got the tire warning, the tire deflation warning system going off. And the tire was completely destroyed. Fortunately, it does have run flats. So we were able to crawl along at 30, 40 kilometers an hour to the nearest town where we proceeded to change the wheel. And in all that big space and that huge car, the spare wheel is a little space saver. Little Mari biscuit. And then we had to change the Mari biscuit, put that on, and now that's a little 18-inch wheel, whereas the other ones are 21 or 22 inches, or 22, for the rest. And now the whole car's out of balance, and we're driving back on the highway on the N4 from Mpumalanga back to Pretoria at 80 k's an hour with the car and the electronics going mad because nothing is in balance here. You're driving, you know, the whole car is like flipping from side to side and all that sort of thing. So that was definitely a low light. We survived the flat wheel, but it's not ideal.
Let's drive
out. Eric, it's sorry to interrupt, but it really is an interesting point that Hannes makes with the spare wheels in South African context, because, you know, we own, my wife and I own a Volvo XC90 rather, and the family of ours has an XC60, and recently we had an issue with a similar situation, but we were up in Namibia and we couldn't find a tire for that thing. So, you know, it's a very long story of what we had to do and how we worked it out. And in the end, I bought another full-size spare for my XC90, set me back 20 grand. It's something that people need to be aware of and actually think about when they buy vehicles, when they choose them. Where will you be driving it? And will you be okay if you only have a space saver? So that just as a side note, you know, keep it in mind when you buy your next car.
No, it's a massive point to make. And thanks for doing so. And finally, Hannes, your Let's Drive out of 5.
I have to give it a lot of marks because it's such a technologically advanced marvel of a car. But it's not for everyone. It's too big and it does have the tire problem. So let's go 4.
4 out of 5. And that is the massive BMW X7 as experienced by Hannes Visser. Living the moment till I die. Moving over now to the third car of the episode, and we're moving over to the Kia Seltos. And we're very glad and very proud to have on board, having just come onto the show, Christo Valentine from Kia. Christo, great to have you on board. How are you doing?
Morning, gents. I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for having us.
Absolute pleasure. Tell us a little bit about the Kia Seltos. Of course, we're very much used to having seen the Sportage on the roads over the last couple of years. This one a little bit smaller, but certainly breaking into that family mode.
Definitely. I think one of the things of Seltos that I personally enjoy the most is that it is supposed to be seen as an SUV that's slightly smaller than the Sportage. But you're actually getting a little SUV that is not much smaller than its bigger brother. It plays in the B segment, as we call it, which is massive at the moment. There are just so many amazing cars in that segment, with the Seltos obviously being the best one in the segment. And I'm on my second one already, so I love it.
So you buy it somehow?
Maybe just ever so slightly, Hannes. But I mean, you've driven one, so surely you understand where I'm coming from.
No, you do make a good point, and I'm sure Valdo will get into that now. He drove most of it, but I also drove it, and it was surprisingly good, eh? I must admit.
Yes, surprisingly good, the words used from Hannes. Valdo, you got to experience a lot more of it. Impressed?
Very impressed with it. That we drove it shortly before all of this virus stuff hit us, so we still had an opportunity to drive the car out to Dalstrom to go and film it for Ludville. And I got to experience it in town and on the open road. And I must say, it is a really, really competent vehicle, comfortable, well-appointed, and it looks very, very good. There's a couple of styling things that I really enjoy on it.
Chris, the official title, so to speak, the smartly positioned sub-sportage model. I think that barely scratches the surface because, yeah, it's got a lot of bells and whistles, this guy.
Yeah, it really is the epitome of the way Kia approaches most of its products. You know, I think the days where people pick a vehicle based on looks or whatever else the requirement might be, and then, you know, you get faced with a bit of a menu where you need to tick boxes in order to get it spec'd up to something remotely decent, you will find that Kia has been, we've removed that option long ago. You know, our cars don't have options. They come fully kitted. I like to believe that a lot of other brands are following that trend at the moment because people want value. You know, a car is usually your second most expensive or most valuable asset. And if you're spending what people spent on houses 10, 20 years ago for a car, you really want as much as you can get for it. And again, Seltos, I think, ticks that box. I've gone from driving the top of the range GT line, which literally has every bell and whistle you can think of, to currently driving the very, very entry level manual transmission Seltos. And there's very little that you can fault with it. I mean, you get used to creature comforts, obviously, but from a day to day runabout perspective, you know, across the spectrum, it ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with having a look at it. Of course, I haven't experienced it yet. I'll chat to you with sorting that out soon, hopefully when this lockdown does come to an end, because I've been blown away. I mean, I've always been a Sportage fan because I'm a man who absolutely loves sport. So if I see sport, I'm going to jump into it, and whether it be a car or something that happens on a field. And yeah, when I saw this, I thought, gee, we got a new Sportage around. And of course, that's not the case. But yeah, it's a big car. And it's a terrific market to be in. We talk about the big SUVs. And just before we brought you on, we had the massive X7 from BMW. This is by no means massive, but it's not small either.
No, it's not small at all. I mean, you can probably fit two Seltos in an X7, but again, you're not compromising. I think car design has evolved, and especially in our group, and again, I'm very biased, but, you know, in our group, design has been a pillar of Kia's growth across the past two decades. And you get to a point where you're designing a vehicle such as the Seltos, which is supposed to be, like I said, a compact SUV. But you get inside and you really do not feel as if you are compromising on space, practicality, or versatility. And I think it's also part of a natural progression, you know. So we have a well-established SUV range, and they're all kind of evolving in their own way. So at the top end, you know, Sorento will become bigger than it has been. Sportage will probably grow marginally as well. And that gives Seltos a very natural space. And there's also the Sonet coming last year, if everything goes according to plan, that slots in beneath Seltos. So as a brand, we're very much design first, but also customer and customer needs very much in parallel with that.
Oh, Voldu was about to ask a question, and then you answered it for him. So there we go.
I was just busy writing in the background here to our host, Chris, who's saying maybe we should ask what's going to slot in beneath the Seltos in the range, because obviously we understand that you need a more compact vehicle as well. But then right at the end there, you answered it and stumped us all. So thank you for that.
It's a pleasure. I'm good with sonnets.
Yeah, you seem to be.
Just a question from my side. The one we had, Volvo, the GT line, was a normal automatic gearbox, right?
It's a 7-speed dual clutch.
Yes, okay. It was more than normal. It wasn't a CVT.
It wasn't a CVT. Christo, before you came on, we discussed the benefits that aren't there of CVTs, and I'm so glad that this car has got a proper gearbox in and not a CVT.
Yeah, look, I think if you... I'm a bit of a car guy. You know, I'd much rather be driving somewhere than doing anything else. So things like a transmission and how it pairs with the engine that's in the vehicle, you know, makes a big difference to your experience. I've never been a fan of CBTs either. I really cannot think of a single example where it's worked for me as a driver. But I think the logic behind CVTs makes sense. I think CVTs, fuel efficiency, that kind of stuff is always top of mind with the transmission. But something like a dual clutch automatic does the same thing. I would very much like to sit here and say you would never see a CVT in a Kia, but alas, I am not that high up in the hierarchy. but we live in hope.
We were laughing with Hannes a little earlier because, as you could hear, he's not a fan of CVTs. And we said it's a boomer alert because he certainly isn't embracing the future. And it has been described as being a gearbox of the future. Would you concur? Do you think it's the way that the automotive industry is going? Or can Hannes breathe a little easier that he'll be able to take on his manuals and autos in 10, 15, 20 years' time?
I think, unfortunately, CVTs are not going to disappear anytime soon. I think they will evolve into something different. I think most car manufacturers are aware of the fact that your average consumer do not enjoy it. That I almost want to use design terms, your user experience is not great. So I think whenever there's an engineer in the room, an engineer will try to improve on that. Which is why I think CVTs will evolve. Whether they will become any better, I don't know. I do think, as long as we have petrol heads, we'll have manual transmissions. And as long as we have traffic congestion, we'll have various types of autos. CVTs, in my mind, should go the way of hydrogen power and disappear.
Okay, well, you're the same with Hannes there. Christo, thanks so much. It's been great having you on the show. We're going to discuss the Seltos in a little bit more detail with Voldu telling us more about his experience, but you can listen on the podcast.
Amazing. Thanks very much for giving us the opportunity to chat.
Excellent. Cheers, Christo. Okay, Voldu, tell us more. What did you like about the car?
Derek, there's not much not to like about it, but if we start on the outside, I think the design of the vehicle is what first drew me to it. We had the GT line, the top of the range that Christo also referred to. And that one comes with very, very pretty, alloy wheels of 17 inches. And it also has sort of semi-floating roof rails, if you can explain it like that. So the back end of the roof rail is not attached to the body of the car. It sort of has a support a little bit further forward. And it's just nice little touches like that that really set it apart. One thing that the guys from Kia and Hyundai don't like us saying is that their products are family, because inherently they are tied together. They are one and the same company in Korea. But if you go to their head office, which I've done in Seoul, the building is physically split straight down the middle. The one side is Hyundai, the other side is Kia, and never the twain shall meet. Hmm. Except maybe when they send CAD drawings and some designs backwards and forwards. But even though they share engines, gearboxes, and underlying technologies, the branding, everything is completely different. The way they approach the interiors and equipment levels and so on, it is split completely. So, we can't compare it and say it's this version of that, because it's not. But in the lineup, the Seltos competes with the Hyundai Creta, which has been around quite a bit longer. And the Creta is starting to show its age just a little bit. And the Seltos is absolutely fresh and spot on at the moment. So, there's a lot of things that draw me to the car. Like Christo said, the interior, it doesn't feel at all like it's smaller than the Sportage, which is amazing because, where it slots into the range means that you pay less, obviously, for the Seltos than you would for the Sportage. But you get almost the same thing. And that has to be very appealing to many people.
And of course, we're speaking about a Sportage that is extremely popular in the South African market.
Yeah, the Sportage has done extremely well. It was really the car that put Kia on the map in South Africa. And that was largely down to the design that the well-known designer Peter Schreyer penned when the first Sportage came out in South Africa. That look was the one that made Kia appealing to many people, in my opinion. And it's gone from strength to strength over there through the years. Peter Schreyer has, you know, left the company or left the hands-on design of the new product line, and he was replaced by Luc Donkerwolke at a certain stage, Belgian designer who used to be with Lamborghini, interestingly enough. Luc has just departed Kia as well. But the reality is that Kia has had some top line designers over the years, and it really does come through. It shows very, very well. And, I think, you know, the Seltos is a slightly different take on a great design than the Sportage was. It's not quite as in the face. It's more of a svelte development of the design language, but it certainly works and it's very, very pretty.
I've got a little story to tell as far as Peter Schreyer is concerned. Obviously he's very, very famous. Very, very successful, very sought after, and I would hate to know what Kia paid him to turn the brand around and the whole look of and feel of the Kia's design language. But I was lucky enough to actually meet him in Seoul, in Korea, during the international media launch of the Sportage. Well, the one that he designed, obviously. And I asked him a few questions, because just to put this into perspective, they gave him everything he wanted. I mean, they built him a design studio at the Kia headquarters in Seoul, but they also built him one in Germany. He's a German and he's from Germany, obviously, and they built him a studio in, I'm not sure what the town was, I can't remember the name of the town, but they built him a studio there, and then they also built him a design studio in California. And I said to him, why in California? And he said, because he likes the Californian red wine. So he had the power to get Kia to build him a studio near good red wine so that he can drink red wine and do his paintings and design cards. And that's how powerful he was.
And he didn't imbibe too much in the red wine when designing, because the result is pretty good, Voldy.
Well, maybe, Derek, that's exactly what he did. you're never sure what the inspiration is, but it certainly works really, really well. But it's not just the design that makes the car as good as it is. It's really the spec level that you get, the entire range, all of them, whether you take the EX entry level or the GT line, top of the line, they all come with a 20-centimeter touchscreen in the middle. You can do Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, these reverse cameras, climate control, and buttons on the steering wheel, automatic headlamps, cruise control, you know, absolutely everything is there. Electronic stability program these days comes standard. It is a comprehensive package that you get for your money. And I do think that it's certainly a car that more people should go and test drive if they're in the market at all.
Your let's drive out of five.
It's so difficult now, because over the last four episodes, we set the bar quite high with various very good products. I can't give it a five because it's not, you know, that standout perfect, but it's very pretty close. I'd go with a 4.5 for it.
4.5 out of five. That is the Kia Seltos. And I'm gonna change. Moving from the cars to the drivers, we move over to Belito, I think he is. Guy Bottrell, who last year in the Total Court Stratagazoo Racing R2 Etios clinched his fourth SA Rally Championship with two rounds in hand. Guy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on board. Tell us about the latest success in your storied rally career.
Well, we've had a phenomenal few years with the Toyota Etios R2. We won multiple championships in a row. And this year we decided to do something different. So we purchased the Toyota Etios R4, which is the latest generation four-wheel drive car. And we've taken on the African Rally Championship, which takes part all over Africa. We were very fortunate enough to get the first round in before lockdown, which was in Ivory Coast. And the car made it back just in time to go straight into lockdown. So that's where we are at the moment.
Tell us about that first round.
It was a phenomenal roller coaster of an event. First of all, we shipped the car off on the 2nd of January to have about a month and a half transit time to get to Ivory Coast in time. And the whole crew flew to Ivory Coast. It's quite a difficult place to get to. We had to fly to Kenya first and wait almost 24 hours for a connecting flight to Ivory Coast. And with the crew eventually arriving there on time, you know, we were tracking the car. It hadn't arrived yet. When we left, we knew we were in a little bit of trouble with the car arriving in time, because there's been multiple delays in each port, because the car didn't go straight to Ivory Coast. Unfortunately, there's no direct route there. So we actually had to stop off at four different ports and change onto two different vessels to get there. And each port had its own delays, and each vessel was running late. So we were going to make it with one day in spare with the car arriving, which we thought we were fine with. And the day the vessel was meant to arrive, we got news from the clearing agent that the car wasn't going to make it in time. So, you know, we were actually looking for a ticket to come home because the car wasn't arriving. The crew didn't have anything to work on, and I didn't have anything to drive. So, you know, we were hugely disappointed. There was a huge amount of effort to get the whole team to Ivory Coast, and obviously at a huge expense. It's not cheap to race, you know, on the other end of Africa. So we were bitterly disappointed. And out the blue, one of our competitors, Gary, who's our main competitor, came to us at about 6 o'clock at night the day before the event. And he says he's got a Class A African spec car in his garage, three hours away, and would we like to use it? So we made some phone calls, and we hired his car for their event. We can't believe it that there was an FIA spec car in spec, ready to race in Ivory Coast, waiting for us to use. So it was unbelievable that he lent us his car. And we managed to complete the event, scoring maximum points in our class to take the lead of the African Rally Championship. So it was phenomenal.
Guy, just a quick question. You mentioned various classes there. You were talking at first about the R2 Etios that you won with last year, then buying the R4, then there's a class FIA spec car in Ivory Coast. Can you just quickly run us through the classes that are in South Africa versus internationally, and then also the differences between driving the R2 and the R4 for you?
Sure, no problem. So in South Africa last year, the premier class was R2, which is a 1600 naturally aspirated car, front wheel drive, deceptively fast motor car. They're absolute pleasure to drive. Our Etios was locally built and locally designed in South Africa, and we had huge success with that car. We dominated the R2 proceedings for numerous years, and when we decided to move, you know, we'd done R2 for numerous years, and it was time for us to take another step forward. And the only route that we had was mainly to partake in the African Rally Championship. Now, the African Rally Championship runs slightly different rules to South Africa, and in that, to compete and to be competitive, you need a four-wheel drive motor car to handle the rough terrain in Africa, very different conditions to South Africa. And it just happened to be that the R4, which is a new generation car, has just been launched to the world. And the first car ever built was a Toyota Etios. It was built by Orica in France, and it debuted with Hagenfecken at the Sabi event last year. And our main sponsors from Zambia, Wildcat, were there to come and watch the car because we had a lot of interest in it. And after its winning its debut event in South Africa, they bought it right there and then. The R4 car is a four-wheel drive car, 1600, but it's turbocharged. It's got all the latest technology in it. It's got launch control. It's got anti-lag. It's got a huge amount of technology into it. It is an absolute pleasure of a motor car to drive. It's basically the newer generation of the S2000 with all the latest upgrades, which is an absolute pleasure to drive, and it's an honor to be part of the team. But to compete in the African Rally Championship, you can compete in it as long as your car falls within the African Rally FIA specs, which allows any homologated FIA vehicle that is four-wheel drive and falls within its category. So there are, they've opened it up to numerous different motor cars. There are cars that are quicker than us. So for example, the R5 is quicker than the R4. And also there's some older generation cars like the Subarus and Mitsubishis, which they fall in an N4 category, but they also can score points in the main event for ARC. So that is how we managed to hire a car in Ivory Coast and still score points in our championship.
Guy, you said that thankfully you managed to get that first round out of the way before the lockdown hit, but unfortunately, it did scupper the rest of the rounds. I mean, 2020 has been hit heavily in the sporting world in every sense. And obviously the motoring world's no different. I mean, what happens from here? Of course, we've got to wait until governments allow us to be able to compete. But yeah, at the moment, everything on hold. I mean, certainly it's been a massive pain for you and everyone in the team.
It's been a disaster. You know, what we did is we booked all our flights up front. We've got crews that we you know, pay a monthly salary to. So it's been a huge blow financially for us to put everything on hold, because a lot of our fixed costs are still running. And you know, we're trying to look after our staff as best as we can. And we doing jobs around the place, like we working on our transport truck. We the car's prepped. There's nothing more we can do with the car, but as it stands, we're just standing and waiting. Everything is on hold. Unfortunately, we got news last week that the Safari Rally in Kenya has been postponed till 2021. So we were really looking forward to that. That would have been our first WRC event, and now it's been put on hold. So you know, it's 2020 has been a terrible year for motor racing. I'm not sure when we're going to kick off, but you know, we got all our sponsors on board, and you know, we're just trying to keep everything going on social media. We've been posting a lot of videos of you know, the past, and just trying to keep a bit of momentum going. And you know, we're just waiting, you know, hopefully in lockdown three, hopefully that'll come fairly soon and we can get more clarity on when we can start racing again.
Yeah, Guy, we are all holding thumbs and we wish you the best of luck in the near future. And of course, the unknown future, so to speak. But we do know that once you do go back out onto the road and the dirt, that you will shine, as you have been doing alongside your co-driver, Simon Vasilalu, who's been a terrific man in support. But yeah, congratulations on all you have managed to achieve with Toyota Gazoo Racing SA. Let it go from strength to strength.
Thank you so much. And it's a great honor to be part of a fantastic brand name like a Toyota Gazoo Racing. And we just, every time we go out there, we do our best and try and be the best brand ambassadors we can be.
Yeah, well, I can guarantee it won't be the last time we'll be chatting to you on Let's Drive. Cheers, Guy. So moving over now to wrapping up the show. It is the Let's Drive Top 5, and an honor of the Kia Seltos, which we discussed a little earlier. I'm going to ask my two esteemed colleagues. I want to hear from them. The best compact crossover and small SUVs from both of them. Let's give it to Hannes, starting with you. Top five.
It has to be the one that started that old trend more than 20 years ago. The original Toyota RAV4, that little short boxy one. That was an absolute classic.
Okay, the original. Moving back to Voldu. What's yours?
I think the when it first came to South Africa, the Hyundai Tucson, and then later the iX35, and then the Tucson again, made such an impact on the market that it has to count amongst the top five.
The Hyundai Tucson, or as they say in Benoni, the Tucson. And moving over to Hannes.
One of the prettiest ones for me is the Mazda CX-3.
Ooh, that's a nice one. Voldu?
We spoke about it quite a lot earlier, but for similar reasons to the Hyundai Tucson, it has to be the Sportage, which really managed to cement Kia as a manufacturer in South Africa. So thanks to Peter Schreyer and the Sportage, I think that one cracks the top five as well.
Okay, so the Sportage cracking the top five. Will we see the Seltos edge into this arena in the near future, or perhaps even now? Because Hannes, you still have one final pick, going with the Seltos or something else?
Let's do that. It's a toss up between the Hyundai Creta and the Seltos, and because the Seltos is newer and prettier, I'll include that into my list.
That's amazing. A brand new car on the market, but cracking the Let's Drive top five. Gents, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you very much to Chris Lou up front, and as you just heard, Guy Bottrell. We'll see you soon. Cheers, Hannes. Cheers, Valder. Cheers to the listeners. We'll be back later. Ciao.